this is Bill Moseley, and this is Chop Top, and you're listening to Rumor Radio. Dog will hunt.
Reports of violence are coming in from neighboring states. The governor is telling everyone to stay in their home. This is not a joke. It appears that the dead are coming back to life and eating the flesh of the living.
The eerie sound of the voodoo drums tell us that this is the night the living dead walk. From the darkness they shuffle, eyes glazed with death, hands clawing for blood. The zombies walk.
He's mutating. I want him in the Nemesis program. Take her to the Raccoon City facility. Then assemble the team. We're reopening the Hive. I want to know what went on down there.
We thought we had survived the horror. But we were wrong.
Mr. Monster.
Little affair.
It's almost like Halloween.
The sickest,
goriest,
bloodiest, most eye-gouging, entrail-fingering episode of Rumor Radio ever.
The old magic is still there.
Now, when the appellation Godfather of Gore actually began, I don't know. But I'm delighted. I accept that mantle with great pride.
The legendary Herschel Gordon Lewis, our guest this week.
Oh, that's gross.
Disclaimer.
But, gee,
I got
the bits,
easy.
Get rid of it.
The caustic critics dissect Joe D'Amato's Anthropophagus.
Completely sick. It's wrung.
Her face, like pizza, gets scraped off.
Plundered. Ravaged. Raped.
We also take in Dinner with Dracula and assorted splattered sounds from Nick Cave, The Demon Seeds, No Means No, and the photon torpedoes to start. Better put on your raincoat, fiends, because this week it's raining blood.
But ladies and gentlemen, have you ever seen the sight of human butchery in person?
Want to go and get out of here.
No means no.
Every day I start to ooze.
I guess you heard my head turn brown. I lost several pounds and just looked terrible. This marriage of black and yellow never looked good on paper. His mother was a secretary, I think. Her father a rapist. I'm a little pressed for time and facts. But I know. It's those personal acts, that cut through the crap. I heard they were dismembering people down the street. Those Joneses, you gotta love them. Various disguises are regrettable but necessary. And you're gonna make it through the day. Every day, every day, every day I start to lose. Every day, every day, every day I start. sore. Perhaps you should
stop picking at it.
I never felt so alone. I never felt so used. I never felt so excited. It was those personal acts. Those personal acts that cut up the crap and served it for breakfast. You don't fuck. My mom phoned up the police today just to say hello.
Hello.
My girlfriend's been missing for 2 weeks. I guess that's what happens when you walk the streets with a bag in your head and a sign that says, every day, every day, every day I start to lose. Every day, every day, every day I start to lose.
What service did you require, please?
Oh, quick! Anybody, just get help!
Where are you calling from, sir?
By horror! Boombox! There was this roaring noise! A big white light in the sky! And then these invaders started killing us!
Hold on, sir. I'll connect you with the Department of Internal Affairs.
Oh, they're after me!
Hello? Is there anybody there?
Gourmet at the Rue Morgue Festival of Fear, and you're listening to Rue Morgue Radio.
Oh, be still my beating heart.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset.
All right, just stop the f***ing spitting.
So what was that film about?
You've exploited these individuals in your film.
I'm curious, are you an active fan of horror? So what is it exactly about these children's sketches?
They're apparently a horror musical.
Continue.
I speak nothing but the fucking English language. And if that's infamous, then
tough titters.
This is Feedback with part one of my interview with the legendary Herschel Gordon Lewis, the godfather of gore. Mr. Lewis was gracious enough to talk to us at great length about many aspects of his filmmaking career, so stay tuned for future episodes of Rue Morgue Radio for more excerpts from this interview. So Herschel, the first thing I'd like to ask you about is what course of events led you into the filmmaking business?
I had been in the advertising business and shooting television commercials. There was a small studio in Chicago that shot only in 16 millimeter, by the way, that was owned by a man named Martin Schmidhofer. Now, Marty Schmidhofer had a partner who had left the company, and he was looking for someone to buy in. The terms were very favorable, and so I bought a half interest in that studio, one of many idiotic things I've done in my lifetime. What I discovered once I was in there was that the major advertising agencies insisted on 35-millimeter film. The studio had no 35. So there was an old film studio in Chicago going out of business called Atlas Films, and I bought their 35-millimeter equipment. Well, then, once I had the 35-millimeter equipment, it became clear to me that although the major advertising agencies wanted 35-millimeter, they also wanted to shoot in California, and here I was in Chicago. And so the tipping point, I guess you'd call it, came one day when I was talking to a friend and bemoaning my fate. And he said, how do you make any money in the film business? I said, the only way to make money in the film business is to shoot feature films. He said, why don't you shoot features? And that planted a germ which kept cropping up like malaria until eventually I began to shoot feature films. The whole thing really was perhaps an accident of history, but I'm delighted that it happened.
So after 1960, you made a number of films, including some nudie films. But in 1963, you made the film that you will forever be most identified with, which became a landmark in American cinematic history, The Notorious Blood Feast. So what events conspired to bring that film about?
We were shooting a movie for somebody else, and that particular epic required only 4 days, and it became quite clear to me that with all the movies I was shooting for other people, that kind of film was not only becoming a crowded area, but also taking a direction that I didn't choose to follow. The subject matter was getting stronger and stronger. The people in the business were becoming more and more of a type that I didn't really feel were leaders of society. And I felt it was time to either get out or to try to find another kind of movie that satisfied the qualifications we had to have, because at that time, the only way to get a movie, make money out of a movie, was to show it in theaters. We had no cable. We had no video cassettes. We certainly didn't have DVDs. The movie made money in the theaters or not at all. So then the question became, what kind of motion picture might there be that the major companies either cannot make or will not make that theaters still will show? It was a very short list. In fact, today I don't think there's any list at all. I was in the hotel in Miami late at night watching some ancient movie. I think it had the actor Edward G. Robinson playing the part of a gangster. I may be wrong there, but something like that. And the police caught up with him and pumped him full of bullet holes, and he died peacefully with a little splotch on his shirt. And I said, Eureka! That's not the way it goes. And the result of that was to make a movie in which blood literally gushed. In fact, Blood Feast, among its other strange firsts, was the first movie in which people died with their eyes open. Today it's quite a common thing, but there was no picture in which people died with their eyes open prior to Blood Feast. So that was the genesis of Blood Feast. We were staying at a place called the Suez Motel on the North Beach in Miami Beach. Outside the Suez Motel was a fake cement sphinx. I have been to Giza in Egypt, as perhaps you have, and there's a sphinx there, which is perhaps 200 feet tall. The sphinx outside the Suez is about 8 feet tall, but a sphinx is a sphinx if you look up against the sky. So that gave us the idea for an Egyptian motif. And as I think most people who are familiar with Rue Morgue are quite aware, Blood Feast is about an ancient Egyptian caterer named Fuad Ramses. I picked the most Egyptian name I could think of. And that was the story that underlay the origin of Blood Feast.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we are supposed to show you scenes from the picture Blood Feast, which will be shown as a late show next Saturday night. However, due to the extreme horror of the context of this picture, and due to the fact that this audience has not been forewarned, we will not show this preview. Instead, let us warn you that no children will be admitted during the showing of Blood Feast. In fact, there will be a policeman on duty at the box office to make sure they do not enter the theater. And if you're the least bit squeamish or have a heart condition, we strongly recommend that you not attempt to see this picture. A nurse will be on duty during the showing of the picture too, not as an advertising gimmick, but because she may very well be needed. See the picture if you must, but remember, we warn you.
You're my fave, but I get too embarrassed to phone in my request. It's too disembodied, you know. Now that we're here in flesh and blood, I could maybe make a request and it'd still count, huh?
Sure.
This is Caleb Emerson, and I would love to hear any of the various Dayu Zombie Bastards theme songs featured on the Dayu Zombie Bastards motion picture soundtrack here on Rumorg Radio.
Demon Seeds.
Dayu Zombie Bastards!
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 Die, die, die!
Let us know what you think. Do you think we're okay? Or we out there?
Yonder hole in flames, dragging behind me.
this sack of chains. Who's that young doll in flames? Well, up jumped the devil and he staked his claim. Start the doom to play the villain's part. I was the baddest Johnny in the apple. Caught my blood was blacker than the chambers of a dead nun's heart. But who's that milling around the courthouse steps? Nail on my face to the hitching fence. Who's that milling around the courthouse steps? Oh, jump the devil and off we crept. Deserts of Mexico, where my neck was safer from the lynching rope. Who's that yonder laughing at me like I was the brunt of some hilarity? Who's that yonder laughing at me? Well, jump the devil, one, two, three.
Of Halloween, Friday the 13th, and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the Grim Reaper. It's not the fear that'll tear you apart. It's him.
All right, this is Feedback.
And this is Chris Alexander. And this week we're going to take a look at Joe D'Amato's classic gore fest, Anthropophagus, known in some circles as Anthropophagus the Beast, and in the U.S. in a heavily cut version as The Grim Reaper. Now, Anthropophagus is a film I've never actually seen. I'm watching it recently. It doesn't quite live up to its legendary hype of being the most repulsive, repugnant motion picture ever lensed, but it is still something about it that's kind of disgusting and gross and sticky and just made me feel kind of uneasy. Now, the film is basically about a bunch of tourists that wind up on a Greek island looking for their friends. Once they hit the island, they meet a blind girl who's been traumatized by something. Turns out there's a hulking Frankenstein-like monster roaming around the island, eating everybody in sight. He's a hungry son of a bitch, there's no doubt about it. He's ugly.
Played by George Eastman.
Actually played by Luigi Montefiore.
Montefiore, also known as George Eastman.
That's true.
A mainstay in Joe D'Amato's films.
Was the lead stud in several of his straight porn films, too.
Now, I have a completely different experience with this film because I saw it at a very delicate young age. And at that point in my life, this was when video stores first popped up in neighborhoods in England, before the Video Nasties Act, when you could see the sickest, most depraved horror movies in existence totally uncut. That was all to change just a couple of years later. Anthropophagus being one of the films that spearheaded that whole Video Nasties Act, and the film actually in England went on to be banned for 18 years. So when I first watched this film, it really traumatized me. On one hand, and on the other hand, instilled in me a thirst and a sick craving to see even more depraved horror movies. Revisiting it 20-odd years later on DVD, yeah, it's quite disappointing. It's quite banal for about an hour and 15 minutes of its running time. All the action happens in the last 15 minutes, but when it kicks in, it is completely sick, it's wrong, it leaves you feeling plundered, ravaged, raped.
It is a weird movie, and I could see how seeing this as a child, because nothing... great thing about all these Italian films and European films of the time, the gore fests, is that all bets are off. You can't guarantee... not like the American counterparts, you can't guarantee who's going to live or die. You can't predict the formula. There's no formula. Things just randomly happen. So it's got kind of a weird, edgy, nightmarish logic to it, and I think that's what makes Anthropophagus work.
Now, I gotta explain something. Watching the movie, I realize that I remember this film as a far more graphic and visceral experience than it really is. And I was actually quite surprised that a couple of scenes that I vividly remembered aren't even in the film until I went over onto the special features. And then I looked at the trailers and saw that some of the shots that I remembered seeing were actually real, and they're in the trailers. So the print on this Shriek Show reissue is, I'm saying it's censored.
I don't know if it's censored or not, because if the scene in particular in question here is the one with the girl gets yanked
the face scraping
head first through the attic. And in the scene, you're telling me this, you saw it as a kid, where her face, like pizza, gets scraped off as it's coming through the thing. But when you look at the trailers, it's not only a different shot, it's a different angle, it's a different roof, and there's like latex like being peeled off her face. It's a different shot entirely, which leads me to believe that D'Amato, aka Aristide Massachezzi, whatever the hell his name is in Italian, must have shot a couple different versions of these scenes depending on which country they would end up in. I'm not quite sure if anyone out there
with a different roof, with a different
roof
location?
I don't know, maybe it was an insert after the fact. There's something
there's so many different prints of the movie. I mean, it was censored, then it was censored again, then it was censored again. I think it was eventually released in England with 10 minutes cut from the movie.
If anyone can enlighten us to this fact, you know, drop us an email, go on the Rumorg message boards, and because I personally want to know. You know, I need to know. I won't be able to rest.
We got to get to the bottom of this.
We got to get to the bottom of this.
It's a very perplexing
flesh eating well. Yes.
All right, well, until next week, this is Feedback.
And this is Chris Alexander singing, do 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 do. I say D'Amato.
And I say D'Amato.
I say Grim Reaper.
And I say Anthropophagus.
D'Amato.
Aristide Massachezzi.
Luigi Montefiore.
George Eastman.
Let's eat some unborn kids. Chomp.
Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off. But oh, let's call the whole thing off.
Chomp.
get enough of our boogeymen.
What's your take on all these rumors we've been hearing about vampires?
If vampires existed, don't you think we would have found them by now?
Dracula walks into a bar and orders a cup of hot water. He takes out a tampon and dips it in. Bartender says, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm making tea."
Served for free at Castle Dracula by the sea. Dr. Jekyll was there, the hunchback was there, the only normal person was me. The waitress, a vampire named Perkins, was so very fond of small gherkins. While she served the tea, she ate 43, which pickled her internal organs. What a swimmer is Count Dracula's daughter, but her pool looks more red than it ought to. The blood stains the boat, but it's easy to float, 'cause blood is much thicker than water.
Frankenstein! Scalpels go on the left with the pitchfork!
For dessert, there was batwing confetti, and the veins from the mummy were ready. I first frowned upon it, but with ketchup on it, it tasted like spaghetti. Look into my eyes, look deeper. You're in my power. Come closer, let me bite your neck.
A germ which kept cropping up like malaria.